Chapter 25 Flying Dutchman.
"Do you have any practical advice for us, Colonel?" Major Smythe asked as we adjusted the helmets of our Krestang-powered armor suits. It was a part of a test before the operation we'd be performing the next morning.
"About what? Everyone on your Spec Ops team has more parachute training than I have. Audio check."
"Your audio connection is confirmed," Smythe replied.
"Sir, you are the only one of us, the only human, who has done an actual space dive."
"True, I guess. My space dive didn't involve me falling into an atmosphere, Major. That was kind of the point at the time. On this op, we're doing that deliberately."
"Oh, certainly. Do you have any advice for us about the space portion of our dive, then?"
I thought a moment.
"Bring music, or an audiobook or something. We'll be coasting through space for a long time. It gets boring after you get used to staring at the pretty stars. If you don't have anything to occupy your time, Skippy will talk to you. A lot. Or he will sing show tunes."
"Oh, bollocks," Smythe groaned.
"Yesterday he spent 2 bloody hours talking to me about the profound changes to European literature during the Enlightenment. After 1 hour, I felt like throwing him out an airlock or jumping out myself. I will inform the team."
"Great. And Major, one more piece of advice."
"What is that, Colonel?"
"Everyone should make sure they pee before we jump."
"Pool, I see you have been cleared for duty," I asked during an inspection of troops that would be making the space dive with me and Smythe. The information about how injured people were healing was in my daily update, which I actually read, unlike a lot of reports that were sent to me. "How's the ankle?"
"Squared away, sir." She hopped up and down on the leg that had been injured, then stood on the toes of that foot. She was rock steady on that foot. Her gymnastics training must have helped.
"Good as new."
A slight grimace on her face told me otherwise. That, and the report from Dr. Skippy that had told me that while she was healed functionally, her leg was going to be sore for another couple of weeks. Close enough. If Major Smythe had cleared her, that was good enough for me. The actual space dive, at least the space portion of it, was uneventful. Boring, even, after we all got used to staring at the pretty stars and the planet growing in front of us. The music in my helmet speakers suddenly cut out, replaced by Skippy's voice.
"Hey, Joe, are you busy?"
"Super busy, Skippy. Practically frantic,"
I said, trying to stifle a yawn. It was unsuccessful. I gave a jaw-stretching yawn. Soaring through space by yourself was boring, especially when I had been doing it for several hours already.
"Uh-huh. I can see that. You are potentially going into combat, and you're practically asleep, Joe. Captain Giroux is half asleep also. Lieutenant Williams is asleep. He asked me to wake him at the appropriate time. He's not alone. Half of the Special Forces are taking a nap right now."
Damn. Those Spec Ops guys and women were stone-cold frosty when faced with danger. I was too keyed up with fear to do more than let my mind drift and daydream. Truthfully, there wasn't much to do. There wasn't anything to do. Anything we did might reveal our presence, so we didn't do anything. When you wake Lieutenant Williams, do it with a rousing version of "The Army Goes Rolling Along." "Lieutenant Williams commands the Navy SEALs team, Joe."
"Exactly."
"Oh, I get it now.
All right, we'll do." "That will be fun. Anywho, Joe, since you're not busy, I'm going to take this golden opportunity to explain to you in great detail how very much I hate you for humiliating me so many times."
"How about we not do that and say we did?"
"Sadly, no." "Do I have a choice?"
"I control your helmet speakers, so no. Unless you take your helmet off, which I would not recommend."
"Okay, let's start with Chapter 1, entitled, Why I Hate Your Stupid Ugly Face."
I had to admit, Skippy had put a lot of effort into this. I mean, he had taken notes and everything. He wasn't joking about it being broken into chapters either. Chapter 2, or maybe it was 3, was How Monkeys Are Incapable of Truly Appreciating the Vast Scope of My Awesome Awesomeness, or something like that. His relentless logic made several very valid points that were impossible for me to argue with. I probably would have agreed to hate me too if I had been paying attention. Truthfully, I tuned him out after about 5 minutes. Overall, listening to his lengthy diatribe was way better than him singing show tunes, so it was a win-win situation. It made him happy, and it wasn't like I was busy anyway. To help, I said, or, yeah, at random intervals,
while I daydreamed about going on a nice long camping, canoeing, and fishing trip in Maine when I got back. If I ever got back. A camping trip, someplace far from cell phone service. It would be so great to unplug for a while. No interruptions. Joe?
Hmm?
Have you been listening to me?
Hmm.
Oh, shit, did he ask me a question? I shook myself back to full alertness. Of course I have, Skippy. The way you make your points is very impressive.
Really?
You have been saying hmm, and yeah, at suspiciously regular intervals.
Sure, to show you that I'm paying attention.
Well, that was nice.
Wait.
Hey, I just played back the data and analyzed your brainwaves. You have been daydreaming the whole freaking time.
No, I wasn't, I protested feebly.
All right, then. What are the three top reasons why I am fully justified in hating you? They were outlined in Chapter 4.
Oh, wow, Skippy. There are so many to choose from.
Liar! Damn it, now I have to start all over again! He sighed.
Chapter 1, entitled, Why I Hate Your Stupid Ugly Face.
Too late, Skippy.
Why?
Because according to my head-up display, I'm about to hit the atmosphere in like 2 minutes, right?
Shit.
Yes, you are.
This isn't over, Joe.
My head-up display showed a line of fireballs in front of me like a string of pearls stitched across the face of the planet. The planet itself was not a great place for us to be. It also was not the reason that I very much did not like the idea of us going there. The planet, which somewhere along the way acquired the nickname Jumbo, was big. Like Earth, it was rocky with a liquid core, a density similar to that of our home planet, and a transparent atmosphere. Calling the place Jumbo was appropriate because it was far larger than Earth, so big that gravity at the surface was 42% greater than Earth normal. Let me say that again, 42% higher gravity. On Earth, I weighed 185 pounds. On Jumbo, I would weigh 263 pounds. If you are not American or you are an American nerdnik who thinks in metric, I would weigh... let me think. There are 2.2 pounds in a kilogram, so multiply by 2.2... No, it's the other way around. You divide by 2.2, so... Oh, forget it. I would weigh 42% more kilograms on Jumbo than I would on Earth. Our Krestang rifles weighed about 12 pounds fully loaded on Earth. On Jumbo, we would be carrying around 17-pound rifles. Plus, we would be carrying all of our other essential gear, which also would weigh 42% more than normal. It was not an ideal situation for a team planning to assault a technologically superior species on their own ground. According to Skippy, Jumbo used to have a breathable atmosphere. In the past, the atmosphere was much thicker than that of Earth, but not so thick that the pressure at the surface would crush a human. Although it had less oxygen in the mix, the density was so much greater, it would have been possible for human lungs to take in enough oxygen to breathe almost normally. Jumbo used to have a breathable atmosphere in the distant past. It did not have a breathable atmosphere now. Jumbo also used to have abundant surface life. Now the native life there was limited mostly to microscopic organisms beneath the surface. Something very bad had happened to Jumbo, and that was why the Theranan Advanced Research Directorate had a small facility there, basically a monitoring station. A long time ago, the Maxalks had a colony on Jumbo, and during their war against the Rindaloo, the Maxalks had used Elder devices as powerful weapons. That use of Elder devices for destructive purposes awakened the Sentinels that the Elders had left behind. And one thing the Sentinels did was cause Jumbo Star to throw off a portion of its outer layer. Jumbo was scorched, much of its atmosphere blown away by the intense stellar fireball. Trying to figure out how the Sentinels had used a star as a weapon, and investigating the nature of the Sentinels themselves, was the purpose of the ARD station on Jumbo. The planet itself was not why I very much did not like Skippy's plan, although the planet did suck in my professional opinion. I had been on 3 alien planets so far, Camp Alpha, Paradise, and Newark, and any one of them would have been preferable to Jumbo. On Jumbo, we would need to live inside inflatable shelters. Anytime we went outside, we would need to wear the helmets on our Krestang-powered armor suits, or at least wear a breathing mask. For safety, while moving around in the high gravity, we should wear our powered armor suit all the time, except for when we were sleeping. Simply sleeping was going to be difficult. The extra gravity would make us sore if we stayed in any one position for long, so we would probably be tossing and turning all night. Yes, the planet sucked. That was not what I very much did not like about Skippy's plan. Because the whole planet was a laboratory, the Theranin had extensive sensors coverage on and above the planet. Also, there were sensors throughout the star system, so it was difficult for us to sneak up on the research station. Difficult even for us to move around the star system. On the surface, we would have to cover our shelters with stealth camouflage netting and bring along stealth field generators. Those generators, plus their power sources, were heavy, and they were extra heavy on Jumbo. We needed power sources for the stealth generators, for recharging our armor suits, and for the combots. Before the battle, the combots would be used to carry most of our equipment, including the power sources. Of course, those combots would also need power, so some combots would be carrying power for other combots, and we would be dropping combots along the way as their power drained. Skippy had calculated that we needed 14 combots with us, just to have 3 combots for the actual assault. The logistics math for this operation was kind of crazy. When Skippy mentioned the ARD facility on Jumbo was staffed with only 6 Theranin, I figured that this was going to be super easy, that he had found us a truly soft target. My thinking was, we fly down there in a stealth dropship. Skippy makes the Theranin go into sleep mode, and all we need to do is go in and take the Elder power tap. Skippy had quickly explained that unfortunately it was not going to be so easy after all. I can't use my Sandman sleepy trick on these Theranin, Joe. Sorry. You're kidding me, I said, severely disappointed. Come on. This facility can't be heavily shielded like the relay station was. It's just a place for a bunch of science geeks. The facility is more shielded than you expect, Joe. They use artificial gravity. In this case, they use it to decrease the natural gravity of the planet. But the shielding is not the problem. The reason I can't simply order the Theranin there to go into sleep mode is that these little green men are not linked to an AI. Theranin aboard a starship are strongly linked to the ship's AI, so they can control the ship through that link. When we took the Flying Dutchman, I exploited that link to make the entire crew go into sleep mode. There is no such link with the Theranin on Jumbo. Crap. You're going to have to do this the old-fashioned way, Joe. You know, with advanced powered armor suits, combots, and explosive-tipped bullets. The fact that we had to crack open a Theranin facility, defeat the defenses the hard way, and take the Elder power tap did suck. It was still not why I very much did not like Skippy's plan. The method we would use for exfiltration after the assault was also not the source of my objection. When the action was over, we would signal the Dutchman to jump into orbit and send down a big dropship for us. No, my big objection was with Skippy's infiltration plan. His idea for getting us and our equipment down to the surface. This crazy, impractical, dangerous plan was why we were space diving straight at the atmosphere of Jumbo. I very much did not like this idea. According to Skippy, who of course would be relaxing in his man cave aboard the Dutchman while we attacked the Theranin, we could not simply fly down to the surface in a dropship. A Theranin dropship with Theranin stealth capability would be detected by the Theranin sensors on this Theranin planet, Joe, he had explained. It's the same level of technology on both sides. The real problem is that ARD installed an extensive sensor network around Jumbo because they are basically trying to run back the timeline and see exactly what the Sentinels did to the star. Once you get on the surface, it is possible to conceal your presence, but no way can a dropship fly down without being detected. To implement Skippy's crazy plan that I very much did not like, we had first gone to our personal relay station, so Skippy could use it to transmit a message that eventually would be received by a particular ARD ship. When we got to the station, all was well. The submine Skippy had left there reported that it was bored, but it was not so completely bored that it wanted to listen to Skippy singing show tunes. I decided right then that I liked that submine. The submine also reported that it did not yet have any information about whether the Theranin would be sending another surveyor ship to Earth. After we left the relay station, we traveled to the Jumbo system and then we waited. And waited. Finally, only 2 days later than Skippy had predicted, an ARD ship arrived. It went into orbit around Jumbo, stayed there less than a day, then was gone. We waited another 4 days at the insistence of Chotek while I fretted about what was happening on Paradise, then Captain Desai got the Dutchman moving again. She maneuvered the ship into an asteroid field, and we used our 2 big dropships to take small asteroids onto the 3 docking platforms we still had. When the ship was loaded with rocks, Desai got us on a course toward Jumbo, and she released the rocks in a sequence that Skippy had programmed for her.
Right behind the fourth-to-last cluster of rocks was our assault party, space-diving toward the planet in formation with relocated asteroids. The essence of Skippy's plan was to saturate Jumbo with a shower of small meteors. Our assault party and equipment falling in amongst the meteors would not be noticed, according to Skippy. That shiny, smug little beer can would be chilling in his escape pod man cave while we plunged as flaming streaks through the atmosphere of an alien world. I hated Skippy's plan. I also didn't have a better idea, and believe me, I had tried to think of a better idea. And that was why I was in a Kristang-powered armor suit encased in an aeroshell that Skippy had fabricated aboard the Dutchman, with the atmosphere of Jumbo fast approaching. The meteors ahead of us were already burning their way down to impact the surface. We were right behind them. How are the Theranan reacting to the unscheduled meteor shower, Skippy? They are mildly curious, Joe. We are in luck because the Theranan are in the midst of testing a sort of stellar ultrasound satellite that they put into orbit 2 months ago. Also, the Theranan are super distracted because they recently received an Elder power tap that none of them were expecting. What an incredible coincidence, I said with a dry mouth as the planet loomed in front of my eyes. Yeah, that's weird, huh? As Dr. Friedlander predicted, none of the researchers here were able to pass up the opportunity to inspect an Elder power tap, so most of them are either attempting to run tests on it or arguing about which tests to run next. Anyway, nobody is paying much attention to meteors now. After the first cluster of meteors hit, the Theranan analyzed the remaining ones coming in and determined that none of the meteors pose a threat to their facility or the sensor equipment. Excellent aim in there, Skippy. Thank you, Joe. And now I am sorry to say that we are going to lose communications for a short time. The micro-wormhole that I'm using needs to stay outside the atmosphere. Okay, I said breathlessly. Great. Talk to you later. Are you scared, Joe? Of course I'm scared, Skippy. I almost bit my tongue because my teeth were chattering with fear. I'm afraid of heights, you know. This is about as high as you can get. I'm about to fall into the atmosphere of an alien planet in an untested aeroshell that, as far as I know, you made out of pasta left over from the galley. And my parachute was packed by an absent-minded beer can. Other than that, I'm great. Don't worry, Joe. I'm sure that I remember to pack your parachute. Pretty sure. Well, fairly sure, anyway. To be safe, can you reach behind you and... Not funny, Skippy. Oh, come on, Joe, the shiny beer can said in a teasing tone. Admit it. The thought of space diving down to the surface of a planet isn't exciting to you. Combat is exciting too, Skippy. I very much do not like getting shot at either. Maybe you just haven't been shot at by the right people yet, Joe. His voice was distorted by interference as I fell deep into the atmosphere, and the aeroshell became a hotly glowing meteor. Talk to you later, Skippy, I said, and I concentrated on keeping as calm as I could. Prayer helped. There isn't much I can say about plunging through the atmosphere of Jumbo. I didn't hear much of the hypersonic, then supersonic, then just plain sonic roaring noise as the aeroshell I was encased in burned through increasingly thick air. The surface of the aeroshell was designed to heat up and peel away layer by layer. As pieces were torn off, the aeroshell shuddered, and my stomach went along with it. As I said, I didn't hear much because my helmet canceled out the ambient sounds. As for what I saw, that wasn't anything to write home about either, mostly because I had my eyes closed in sheer terror part of the way down. The other reason is that I was encased in a thick aeroshell made of leftover pasta, or something like that. It sure had felt flimsy when I was lowered into it aboard the Flying Dutchman and the thing was sealed closed around me. On the space dive to Jumbo, my helmet visor had a view from a tiny camera in the nose of the aeroshell. After we hit the atmosphere and the air around us turned to red-hot plasma, the view in my helmet faceplate was a representation of what the suit's computer thought was out there. The suit could have showed me pink dancing hippos, and I would not have been able to disprove it. At around 3 kilometers altitude, the aeroshell deployed a drogue parachute that was only designed to slow down my descent. I still couldn't see anything real because the aeroshell's camera had burned away with the outer layer of the shell. There was a sudden jerk when the drogue chute deployed, and when it was shredded as intended, it snapped loose and was replaced by another one, and then by a third. At that point, I was less than 1 kilometer from the ground, and the aeroshell cracked open, both sides exploding away from me and out of my way. I was falling feet first toward ground that I could see was covered by dirt, mud, and rocks. My freefall lasted only maybe half a second to clear the aeroshell pieces, then my own parachute deployed. This was at first a triangular paraglider, although I didn't steer the thing. A computer in my suit scanned the ground, selected a good landing spot, and aimed me for it. Less than 50 meters up, the parachute changed shape to become a big, round, billowing thing that lowered me gently to the ground. Just as my suit boots touched dirt, the parachute snapped loose from my back and rolled itself into a sphere the size of a tennis ball, cords and all. That, I had to admit, was a soft landing, especially in 1.42G conditions. Speaking of the high gravity, I fell down twice in my first 5 steps. The suit compensated for the additional strain of gravity. It wasn't immediately able to compensate for a clumsy user. Walking slowly and carefully, I strode over to where my tennis ball-sized former parachute was, used my power suit to scoop a hole in the dirt, and buried the parachute. Around me, I could see others doing the same, and I could see equipment including combots drifting to the ground on parachutes. The ground shook as a real meteor hit the ground to the north of us, throwing up a tall pillar of dirt. Skippy had planned for the 2 meteors just ahead and behind us to be extra large, so the dirt thrown up by their impact craters would obscure Theranin's sensors. I hoped that worked. "Lieutenant Poole, are you all right?" I asked the closest person to me. On the surface, we could use low-powered helmet-to-helmet lasers for communications without being detected. That only worked if we were in line of sight to the other person, although suits could also be used as relays. The image in my visor said Poole, USA. So I asked her first.
"Yes, Colonel, I'm fine. That was awesome. We have to do that again sometime."
I did not share her adrenaline-seeking U.S. Army Ranger enthusiasm.
"You can do it for me next time. Major Smythe, this is Colonel Bishop. Status check."
While I couldn't see Smythe from my position, I was hoping there were enough suits with line of sight between us that my message would be relayed to him by laser link.
"Down and safe, sir," came Smythe's reply. "Everyone is accounted for."
"Confirmed," I agreed, checking the display on my wrist. We hadn't lost anyone during the drop. I counted that as a victory and possibly a minor miracle.
"Collect the equipment, bury our trash, and let's get moving."
We had timed our landing for mid-morning on that part of Jumbo, so we would have plenty of time to travel before nightfall. Our suits had excellent night vision capability, because Skippy had swapped the original crappy Cristang gear for advanced Theranin equipment. We could have walked through the night, but I vetoed that idea. With the additional gravity, a fall could be fatal, and we had plenty of time. There was no reason to take an unnecessary risk. We would walk that day, set up shelters with camo netting for the night, then walk part of the next day until we were close to the perimeter of the Theranin facility. Because the Theranin did not want their instrument readings contaminated by electromagnetic radiation and airborne chemicals from their facility, the area around their base had very few sensors, which worked great for us. Our plan was to get a couple hours of rest the next night and launch our assault around the middle of the night local time. We wanted the advantage of surprise by catching the Theranin off guard. The 6 little green men and women there were not armed personally. They did have combots and automated defenses that Skippy knew about, and he warned us that ARD facilities may have nasty hidden defenses that he didn't know about. That was why we planned to hit the place with 3 combots and 2 dozen high-speed special forces troops. Plus me, although I would be bringing up the rear and trying my best to stay out of the way. Smythe wanted to assign one person to essentially babysit me. I had vetoed that idea also. He probably did it anyway. After our space dive and free fall down to the surface, walking across the high-gravity dirt and mud of Jumbo, and 1.5 mostly sleepless nights huddled inside cramped shelters, the actual assault on the ARD facility was almost anticlimactic. Most of the facility's defenses were designed to protect it from air assault, and the designers had anticipated being attacked by technology-stealing Cristang. They did not anticipate the attackers would have Theranin-level or better technology. With Skippy's help, we were able to evade the perimeter defenses entirely. The inner ring of defenses reacted to us, but stood down when we supplied the proper authentication codes. Skippy was totally disdainful of the Theranin computer that handled security while the little green men and women were sound asleep. Yes, we had the proper codes to gain entrance to the facility. The computer still should have been smart enough to wonder who was out wandering around in the dark of night, while the computer surely knew that the 6 occupants were sleeping in their bunks.
Or, we later learned, three of them were sleeping in their bunks. The three awake were either too excited about having an Elder power tap to sleep, or they wanted to run tests on it while the other three were sleeping. We never did get a clear picture of the social dynamics among the six occupants of the facility, because one of the three that were awake noticed a light indicating that an airlock was cycling. It was cycling because we were coming in. The computer had let us in. That unnamed alert Theranin probably thought at first that one of the supposedly sleeping Theranin was awake and had decided to go outside, or already was outside and was coming back in. Either way, the secret, unauthorized midnight experiment on the precious Elder power tap was in danger of being discovered. So this alert Theranin sounded an alarm for its two fellows and used the simple expedient of switching on an exterior camera to see who was coming in through the airlock. We were not able to do any magical Skippy tricks of showing a false image through the camera. All we had done was smear some sticky goop and mud over the camera lens. That likely bought us 5 or 10 seconds while the curious Theranin wondered what had gone wrong with the camera. Then it did the smart thing of checking which of the three supposedly sleeping Theranin was not in their bunk. Except all three of them were sleeping in their bunks. And that's when all hell broke loose. The first thing we noticed was the airlock quit cycling. The light that was yellow turned red, and we heard a loud clanging sound as an interior blast door slammed shut. Immediately after that, we were illuminated from above. The Theranin had launched a recon drone that popped up above the facility and spotlighted us before Giraud shot it down. There was no way the Theranin could mistake our Krystang-powered armor suits, because we had left the camo netting behind when we crossed the perimeter. They probably were confused by the three Theranin combats we had with us. Whatever confusion that caused didn't last long, because someone inside activated the automatic defenses and doors in the exterior walls slid aside for computer-controlled guns to lock in on us. That was a nice try, anyway. We knew about the auto guns and had placed charges over the doors. As soon as those access doors slid aside, our shape charges blew the gun emplacements before the muzzles could clear the exterior walls.
"Oh, bollocks," Smythe said calmly. "The Queen has rescinded her formal invitation to tea, and we will have to do this the hard way. Rocket Team 1, clear us a path."
Rocket Team 1 was four troops of mixed nationality, led by Captain René Giraud, who had rockets that were normally part of a combat's weaponry. Since we only had three combats with us, we had two teams carrying rockets with them. Just one rocket ripped a hole in the exterior wall, and four soldiers used their powered armor to tear the hole open wide enough for a combat to stride through. Two of the Hulkin machines led the way, with one held in reserve. Whenever we encountered a blast door or a well-defended section of the facility, the combats pulled aside and a rocket took out the obstacle. The biggest obstacle we faced was a half-dozen combats that were controlled by the facility's computer. The first three caused us a surprising amount of trouble. They managed to destroy one of our combats and partly disable another, before Skippy had gathered enough data to analyze their tactics. After that, we pulled our reserve combat forward and sent the damaged one back to guard our rear. With Skippy telling us how to confuse and defeat the Theranin computer's defense tactics, we made rapid progress. Two of the Theranin opposed us directly with weapons. One of them got off a fusillade of shots that knocked down a Chinese soldier. He quickly jumped in his dented armor up to show us that he was all right. Those two Theranin were the last obstacle to us getting the Elder power tap. It was inside some kind of test chamber. Skippy told us to be careful not to damage it, so instead of blowing the heavy door off the test chamber, we tried overriding the locking mechanism. That was no good. One of the Theranin had fried the controls when they heard us coming. Although they wrongly assumed we were Krystang, they correctly assumed we were coming after the power tap, and they did what they could to deny us the prize. We were exposed while we used a plasma torch to cut into the door. Although four people with torches were able to slice the door open in less than a minute, it felt like forever, as we were still taking fire the whole time. Finally, an Indian paratrooper squeezed in and got our prize, slinging it on his back in an armored pack. He was halfway back out through the door when we were attacked by a pair of combats. Two explosive-tipped rounds ricocheted off the heavy door, knocking the paratrooper back into the chamber. Smythe shouted for him to stay down as his people sent a furious hail of bullets and rockets at the combats, and our own combat launched itself through the air. One of the enemy combats disappeared in an explosion as it was shredded by rockets and explosive-tipped rounds. The other was tackled by our out-of-ammo combat.
The two machines rolled and crashed around the high-ceilinged laboratory, wrecking equipment and breaking the leg of one British SAS who was unable to get out of the way in time. The two damn things nearly took my head off. One moment they were entangled on the other side of the laboratory, and a blink of an eye, they were headed straight for me. I dropped to the floor. The heavy gravity of Jumbo saved me as I crashed to the ground quicker than normal. By the time I rolled onto my back, it was over. Both combats had torn each other apart.
"Go!" Smythe shouted. "Move! Get out of there!"
With the Indian paratrooper surrounded by a half-dozen high-speed special forces for protection, we began our egress operation, going back out the same way we came in.
"Uh-oh, Joe. You'd best move faster," Skippy shouted in my helmet speakers.
"Why?" "As if we needed any incentive to move faster. That Therenan computer has concluded that it has lost the battle and that a hostile force has captured critical technology. Following ARD protocols, it is preparing to self-destruct the facility to prevent you from getting away."
"Shit. How long do we have?"
18 seconds, according to the Therenan computer's internal clock. I am doing what I can to mess with its sense of time. However, I would advise you to run like hell. You have less than 3 minutes to get clear of a 2-kiloton explosion."
"Major Smythe," I shouted.
"I heard, Colonel. All troops discard weapons and packs except for the power tap. Proceed at maximum speed to get clear of the perimeter," he said calmly.
Then, to assure everyone how serious he was, he shouted,
"Move! Run! Run!"
We ran. Once we got clear of the exterior wall, which took only 40 seconds, we used the full power of our suits and ran like hell across the rolling dirt of Jumbo. The suit computers, enhanced by Skippy, did more than half the work of keeping us upright. There was a menu projected on the interior of our visors that we could select with an eye blink. A particular click engaged the suit's escape function. With that feature engaged, the suit mostly ran by itself, using its sensors to keep the slow and clumsy wearers upright during our headlong emergency run across the star-blasted landscape. Those people who had been slow to click their suit's escape function found that Skippy had done it for them. The entire team was racing across the ground at about 80 miles an hour, so fast that my bouncing and jolted vision could not keep up. No way could I have run that fast with me controlling the suit. I would have stumbled and crashed. After what seemed like an eternity of frantic running, with my brain surely sustaining a concussion from rattling around in my skull, Skippy shouted a warning for us to drop flat. My suit fell in a controlled manner to leave me skidding across dirt and rocks until I came to rest face down.
"Skippy, when—"
He didn't need to answer, as my visor automatically darkened and the ground beneath me heaved. It heaved so strongly that I went flying 10 feet in the air and came down rolling around and around uncontrollably as the blast wave hit us. My suit computer said we had gotten only 3 kilometers from the facility when it blew up. When the blast wave passed on, I stumbled shakily to my knees.
"Are we all right, Skippy?"
"Oh, sure, Joe. That was a compression warhead. There's little radiation to worry about. You're safe in your suits."
"Great. Thanks."
Checking my helmet visor, I saw that the entire assault team had survived the explosion.
"What's the status of the power tap?"
"It is good, Colonel," came the reply. "My pack has holes in it, but the case with the power tap is intact."
"Outstanding. Good work."
I got to my feet and brushed my knees off without remembering that I was in an armored suit. To my left, a soldier was jumping up and down, verifying her suit was still in perfect working order.
"Pull. Did you think that was awesome also?"
"Absolutely, sir," she replied, and I could imagine her ear-to-ear grin behind her darkened visor.
"I'd like to do that again, without the explosion."
"Roger that. I'll see what I can do about that. Major Smythe, let's walk."
I looked at which way the wind was blowing the debris. There was a mushroom cloud looming over us, all that was left of the Therenan facility.
"North," I said, pointing in the direction the wind was coming from.
"Skippy, can you send a dropship down to pick us up?"
"Colonel Chang will be jumping the ship into orbit in less than 2 minutes, Joe," Skippy said cheerily. "Dropship is prepped and ready for launch."